Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about a couple of things that are all tied together. It's one of my favorite stories involving the law. It's one of my favorite Michigan legal stories. And it ties in with one of the greatest, if not the greatest, courtroom movie of all time. And I get people asking me that, you know, what can you read that's interesting about courts? What movies are out there that are interesting if you're into realism, you know, kind of court case movie that makes sense? We'll talk about that because this all ties together with a man from Michigan named John Volker. And John Volker was a Supreme Court justice here in Michigan on our state Supreme Court back in the day. And fascinating guy, was not on the bench that long. He'd been a prosecutor in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which I've mentioned many times before about, you know, the fact that I've got roots up there. And it was interesting that this guy from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan came down, was in the Michigan Supreme Court, made some very, very interesting decisions and wrote some very, very beautiful opinions. And one of my favorites involves nudists. People getting naked out in the woods. It's just, he's a fascinating guy, John Volker. But the case that he's involved in that I'm going to tell you about now is also fascinating. And it just all kind of ties together in a way. So it's a little bit of history here, a little bit Michigan legal history. But I think this will be interesting to most people. And I'm getting the story from the Michigan Supreme Court Historical Society published this article a while back, and it's titled People versus Hildebreidel, which is the name of a case. And it says Volker and the Art of Crafting an Opinion. And John Volker is a guy who was an attorney, prosecutor, then a Supreme Court justice. But he's most famous for the fact that he wrote a book called Anatomy of a Murder back in the day. And he wrote it under a pen name of Robert Traver. And the novel was written in 1958. And that novel eventually made him rich and famous. And he's written a bunch of other books as well, including one that's often, if you look over my shoulder here and you see this blue book, it's called Laughing Whitefish. And it's by Robert Traver, of course, who's John Volker. This book came after Anatomy of a Murder. And the interesting thing is, for those of you who are curious, Laughing Whitefish, it's one of those great place names. It's a reference to a river. And, the Whitefish River with the Laughing Whitefish River. So I always picture a fish standing there laughing, but of course, no, it's the river that's laughing. But that's another story altogether. So here's the thing. John Volker was appointed to the Michigan Supreme Court. He was there for a few years. He ran once for re-election and was re-elected. But it wasn't very long that he's on the bench. But one of his best cases is the one, People versus Hildebreidel. By the way, here's what happened. He's up north. He's working as a prosecutor. He's published some stuff, but nothing major just yet. And so when they were thinking about appointing him to the bench, the governor sent up some people to speak to him and interview him. And one of the questions they asked him was, why would you like to serve on the Supreme Court, Michigan? And he said, because I've spent my life on fiction and fishing, and I need the money. But he was joking. He was joking. 3 days before Williams, that's the governor, appointed him to the Supreme Court, he got a contract from St. Martin's Press for Anatomy of a Murder. And Anatomy of a Murder went on to become a bestseller. It was also made into a movie, which is, in my opinion, the best courtroom movie ever made. I don't care. It stacks up against anything. And it's one of the reasons it does is it's very, very believable in how the courtroom scenes play out. George C. Scott's in it. Jimmy Stewart's in it. A young Ben Gazzara is in it. Wonderful movie. It was shot on location in Marquette, Michigan. In fact, I've got photographs of that courthouse too. I'll put them up. And I've been inside that courthouse and I've actually had arguments in the courthouse as well and things. But here's what we're getting at today. There was a nudist colony near Battle Creek, Michigan. And Battle Creek, of course, is the home of all the cereal companies. And there was a 140-acre campus that this nudist colony occupied. And they'd been there since 1942. There had never been a complaint about the fact there's a nudist colony out there. And so, for whatever reason, police officers decided to do something about the nudist colony that nobody complained about. So, in June of 1956, after it had been there for 14 years with no complaints, the police went there and found nudists. One of the officers used this observation to swear out a warrant for the arrest of the nudists. and he returned to serve the warrant on June 30th, 1956. He observed more campers, and he called in officers to arrest them all because they were, in fact, naked. They arrested Earl Hildebridle and several others on charges of indecent exposure, and an elderly widow, justice of the peace, bound them over for trial in Calhoun County Circuit Court. The nudists were convicted and sentenced to 30 days in jail, a $250 fine, plus court costs, and 2 years probation, and they then appealed that to the Michigan Supreme Court. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The Michigan Supreme Court got together, and they said, you know, who wants to overturn this? Who wants to have it upheld? And they had a vote, and it was going to be upheld, no question. So the Chief Justice Detmers said, okay, I'll write the majority opinion. And John Volker said, okay, I'll write the dissenting opinion. And that's traditional, and you often have a majority opinion. You might have concurring opinions where they say, we agree with the outcome, but our reasoning is a little different. And then you have a dissenting opinion. Sometimes you have several dissenting opinions. I mean, that happens. And so here's what happened is the majority was going to uphold the convictions of the nudists. They were, in fact, nude. And John Volker was going to, thought it should be overturned. And one of the things is that there was case law on the books in Michigan from the Michigan Supreme Court saying that being nude outdoors or around other people is indecent and obscene and should be, you know, struck down with the full force of the law. So it seemed like a slam dunk that, like, why is this thing even up here? Obviously, it's just, you know, rubber stamp it and send it back down. So Justice Volker drafted his dissenting opinion, and as they're required to do, he then gave it to the other side, and they, of course, gave him a copy of the opinion they were going to hand down. And it was so powerful that it convinced Justice Edwards to break with the majority and change his vote. And now suddenly, instead of being a 3-4, it's a 4-3. And Volker is now on the majority side. So they can actually overturn the conviction. And so they said to Mr. Volker, Justice Volker, they said, okay, your opinion is now going to be the majority opinion, and we're going to strike this law down based on how well-written your opinion is and how convincing it is that the previous law, the previous cases in our court are wrong, and it's time that we actually overturn some of these archaic laws that are on our books. And Volker said to the Michigan Reporter, which is the organization that actually, or the Michigan Reports, the organization that officially releases the written orders of the court, he said, I will only agree with that if you leave it exactly as it's written. And the first two words of the opinion were, I dissent. And normally, somebody's writing a dissenting opinion will say, I dissent, and here's why. And so to have that be the first two words of a majority opinion doesn't make any sense at all, except that Volker was trying to prove a point. He wanted to make it very, very clear that he recognized that what he was doing was going against the grain of prior case law, of hundreds of years of jurisprudence, but he was convinced that he was right. And although he was in the majority, excuse me, now, he was in the minority just the day before. And so in his mind, the fact that these people on the Supreme Court, you know, one vote changed to allow him to be in the majority and the winning side, he still wanted to point out that I recognize that what we're doing here is going against the grain. So as a result, in the Michigan Reports publication of the decision, the majority opinion begins with Volker's original I dissent. Volker insisted that the Supreme Court reporter keep this apparent anomaly in the reports. And this is what he said. The entire posture and thrust, and perhaps most of the strength of the opinion, is that it is a dissent. The fact would still be quite apparent, though more ambiguously, even were the suggested changes made. So they actually said, well, let's just remove the I dissent and publish it. He goes, no, leave it there. I want to prove a point. So the case that got overturned by this was called People versus Ring, a 1934 case that had upheld the conviction of nudists in similar circumstances because, and this is the quote, instinctive modesty, human decency, and natural self-respect require that the private parts of persons be customarily covered in the presence of others. And so believe it or not, simply being nude was per se criminal under Michigan law. As one commentator noted, the Michigan court considered whether in its own mind this exposure would have been immoral, regardless of how the people present actually felt, and the judges would have been offended themselves, so they held that the policy of the state was offended. It's crazy. Now, Volcker was asked, and he wrote an opinion, about whether or not indecent exposure laws then should just be repealed. And he says, no. Indecent exposure laws can make sense. Rather, he condemned the police action in this case as an illegal search and seizure, and then he also said, he didn't think recreational nudity was indecent exposure. So the point is that no one had complained. Nobody filed a complaint and said, I saw something out in the woods I didn't want to see. Nobody did that. The police heard something was happening out there, so they went out there, and I don't know if they got naked or not, but they went out there, and when they went on the private property and looked around, they were offended by what they'd seen. Well, if you don't like what you're seeing on private property, don't go there, especially when you're not wanted there. So that's a major problem, and he's pointing out that's a constitutional issue, but he does go further, because he could have reversed it on those grounds alone. He could have just said, illegal search and seizure, boom, throw it away. But he wanted to point out that recreational nudity was not indecent exposure. He noted there was no public complaint against the nudists, whose camp was so thoroughly isolated that the police themselves had a hard time finding it. And so he said, so presumably the presumably outraged community boils itself down to a knot of determined police officers who, for some undisclosed reason, after 14 years, finally made up their minds and set up a trap to tip over the place. The police obtained warrants by an obvious subterfuge, which Volcker jokingly called Operation Bootstrap. Yet to say that the search and arrests here were illegal is an understatement. It was indecent, referring to the arrests. Indeed, the one big indecency we find in this whole case, descending upon these unsuspecting souls like stormtroopers. If this search was legal, then any deputized window peeper with a ladder can spy upon any married couple in the land and forthwith photograph and arrest them for exposing themselves indecently. Volcker was unwilling to burn down the house of constitutional safeguards in order to roast a few nudists. Volcker wrote that the Sunshine Gardens nudists were not engaged in indecent exposure at all, for they were only exposing themselves to like-minded nudists. To convict them would be to say that any nudity anywhere becomes both open and indecent, regardless of the circumstances, and simply because some irritated or overzealous police officers may think so. He classed nudists with advocates of various other American manias and fads, which we tolerate, unless they try too strenuously to impose or inflict their weird beliefs upon those who happen to loathe these items. So, I mentioned to you that after this case, and he wasn't on the bench very long, he signed that contract to sell the book Anatomy of a Murder, and then it was very, very quickly snapped up by Hollywood and turned into a movie, which was a wonderful movie. I highly recommend you watch it if you get a chance. It's a little old-fashioned, but it's brilliant in the courtroom scenes. But he largely retreated from the political and cultural conflicts of the coming generation after he retired or stepped off the bench. Anatomy of a Murder enabled him to spend the rest of his life writing and fishing in the Upper Peninsula, and his Supreme Court salary at the time had been $18,000 a year, which is about $117,000 today. But his royalties from Anatomy were almost $100,000 a year. five or six times what he's making as a justice. He won election for a full 8-year term in 1959, but he then resigned about a year or so later. And somebody asked him why, and he said, other people can write my opinions, but none can write my books. So he passed away in 1991, which is a long life that he spent writing and fishing. And he told one of his friends later on, basically asking, talking about like life lessons and so on, you are a success in life if you've had as much fun along the way as possible and hurt as few people as possible. So, again, you are a success in life if you had as much fun along the way as possible and hurt as few people as possible. So that's John Volcker, the Michigan Supreme Court Justice, author of Anatomy of a Murder and other books, including Laughing Whitefish. And one of the greatest legal minds, despite the fact he spent very little time on the bench, by comparison to some other long-serving judges and so on. But his one opinion, People versus Hildebrandt in particular, I find fascinating, especially because the majority opinion starts off with the phrase, "I dissent." So that's John Volker, V-O-E-L-K-E-R, and his pen name was Robert Traver. So if you get a chance, look the man up, and if you get a chance to see the movie Anatomy of a Murder, I highly recommend it. Questions or comments, fire them below. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.